This meeting of the Civil Law Committee will come to order. We're just checking to make sure we have the tape rolling. It's gone. Okay, we're live, we're nationwide. Beginning at the first order of business will be, other than to turn off your cell phones because of the problematic microphones we have in here, will be for introductions. So many of you, I believe all of you have gotten the email regarding introduction of committee staff, and I wanted to take the opportunity to do that now. Charlotte Anton, tell you what, Charlotte, why don't you just introduce yourself, say a little bit about yourself.
Okay. I'm Charlotte Anton. I am the committee administrator for Civil Law, and I'm also the committee administrator for Judiciary Finance Policy. I've been here for working at the House for 5 years, so but this is my first stint as a committee administrator, so look forward to it.
Jay, go ahead.
I am Jay Shong. I'm the committee legislative assistant, and I look forward to working with you all.
And I wanted also to thank Representative Scott for contacting me ahead of time. We talked a little bit about the agenda for the committee. A lot of items that come through this committee are, of course, bipartisan, and they cut both ways, and they're very extremely nuanced, so I look forward to working with you and have a good working relationship this year, as we did last year when you were chair, as things change around. So,
I vote chair, but I'll pick the promotion.
You were chair of the, what were you chair?
Data practices,
so I worked with you on that. A chair. So, again, I'm John Lesh. Most of you know me, but if we can just go around starting this way, Representative Scott.
I'm Representative Peggy Scott. I represent Andover and Northern Coon Rapids. I'm on precinct of Ramsey, and this is my third term.
My name is Paul Rosenthal. I represent Edina, Bloomington, Olivia, and Prairie, and
Good morning. My name is Ryan Winkler. I represent Golden Valley, St. Louis Park, part of Plymouth, and the community of Medicine Lake. I'm starting my fourth term.
Hello, I'm Barbie Russo. I represent Arden Hills, Moundsview, Shoreview, and part of Spring Lake Park. And I'm sorry I'm late.
You'll stop apologizing soon.
Brian Johnson. I represent two-thirds of Isani County and the northern one-third of Chisago County.
I'm Mary Liz Holberg. I represent most of Lakeville, my eighth term, and I've been on the Civil Law Committee all eight terms.
Good morning, I'm Jim Neuberger. I represent House District 15B, that's half of Sherburne County, most of Benton County. I got a little bit of Morrison and Wright as well.
Good morning, I'm Jeff Howe. I represent 13A, which is the 12 townships in the southeastern corner of Stearns County.
Good morning, Mark Anderson, 9A. I represent most of Lower Cass County, and Wadena County and Dodd County.
Good morning, I'm Cindy Pugh. I represent 33B from Chanhassen in the greater Lake Minnetonka area, including Shorewood, Deep Haven, Excelsior, Tonka Bay, Spring Park, Minnetonka Beach, Mound, and one precinct in Orno.
Wow, what a list. Tina Liebling, I represent part of Rochester. Just one place. And I'm in my fifth term, and I've never served on civil law, so happy to have a new experience.
Welcome to the party.
I'm Deborah Hillstrom. I represent all of the City of Brooklyn Center, parts of Brooklyn Park. That's District 40B. I'm in my seventh term here.
I'm Susan Allen, and I represent District 62B, which is South Minneapolis, South Central, southeast of Lake Street. And it's a privilege to serve as the vice chair of this committee with Chairman Lesh.
Thank you, Representative Allen. And I'd also like to introduce Ms. Mullen, our House researcher. Could you introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Mary Mullen. I'm new to House research, but I was doing civil law before I came here for the last few years. Went to school here in Minnesota at the U of M, and I'm very excited to be on the Civil Committee.
Great. Thank you. Also, if we could have our partisan research.
Matt.
Oh, yeah, Matt. Well, you're just ubiquitous, so I suppose.
Mr. Chair, Matt Gehring, also from House Research. This will be my seventh session doing civil law. I also do elections issues and higher ed this year.
Thank you, Matt. And if we could have the partisan research staff introduce themselves.
My name is Kate Weeks. I'm with DFL Caucus Research.
John Hulpquist, House GOP Research.
We also have our committee page, Jacob Rippin. Jacob, raise your hand.
Hello.
And what other committees are you paged for?
I'm the primary page on elections and also helping out with the
office. Okay. Members, today we're going to be talking about data practices, and Lori Beyer-Kropinski is unable to be here, but Stacy Christensen will be here. Stacy, if you could make your way down. Data practices, as many members of the committee will tell you, is a nuanced area that is really important to this committee. It's because it's a rapidly changing area of law. It changes as fast as the technology in your pocket or on your computer, which, as you know, that changes from day to day. So at any given time, something that we absolutely must have made public a year ago or made private a year ago, as far as information held by the government, the game changes again immediately. So do your best to be on top of it. Communicate with other members of the committee and other testifiers who are aware of the issue. And if Ms. Christensen, if you can introduce yourself, say what your division does and a little bit about the history of it at first.
Yep.
Good morning, committee. I'm very happy to be here, Mr. Chair and members. I am Stacy Christensen. I'm the administrator of the Information Policy Analysis Division, and we are within the Department of Administration. And I have a few slides that I'm going to walk through with some highlights of data practices. And at the end, I am going to give you a quiz. So bear with me. But I think we did this a couple of years ago, same sort of format, different examples. And hopefully, it provides you with a good overview of data practices. But to start with, the Information Policy Analysis Division provides technical assistance to look at our customers in four primary areas. We have members of the public, we have the government, we have the media, and the legislature. And the bulk of what we do is answer phone calls and emails and other questions from those four customer groups on issues related to the Data Practices Act as well as the open meeting law. We provide training, and we also provide legislative assistance, which is going to be the most relevant for all of you folks. We generally don't take an advocacy role. We provide technical expertise, making folks aware of possible unintended consequences and making sure that the intent of the legislator is made certain in any sort of bill. And we'll look for those issues, and we will help legislators out, we help staff out, and anyone that has questions about bill drafting. I'm going to start with a question, and I'll get into a little bit more about the Data Practices Act and somewhat of an overview. But in looking at this list on the slide, what do all of these bullets have in common? Email lists of citizens maintained by government, license plate information captured by law enforcement, the St. Paul Crime Lab, businesses that contract with government to build schools, information about why high-ranking government employees resign from employment, and course syllabi created by university professors. Does anyone want to make a guess? They're all issues that have been in the media in the last year or so that have implications of data practices, information access, that type of thing. So data practices can become high profile at times. It certainly has received a lot of media attention recently. And these are just a few examples of some of those issues that have come to light in the media. So you're probably wondering, why should you care about data practices? How does it impact your constituents and everyone else in the state? And by the time I'm done, I hope you will all want to get involved in data practices and want to learn more. Our goal for you in walking away from this overview is to just basically have a sense of how to spot a data practices issue and to give you some things to consider when weighing the policy decisions of data classification and access. So this slide highlights some pretty broad, a broad overview and really the important things for legislators to know about data practices. The first is that the Data Practices Act does not apply to the legislature or the courts. That may come of a surprise to some folks, but the way the legislature has set up the data practices is that it applies to a defined term of government entity. And a government entity is going to include school districts, counties, cities, that type of thing. So the legislature and the courts have their own rules of public access that somewhat align with the Data Practices Act, but it really only applies to government entities. It also has a defined term of government data. And government data is very broadly defined, basically to mean everything that a government entity maintains in some recorded form. So it's going to include all of the electronic databases, any email, DVDs, CDs, anything that government maintains. The only thing it does not include are mental impressions. So until you have put something down in writing, on a post-it note, it can be anything. It is not government data until it's in a recorded form. The most important thing that I want to highlight on this slide is Minnesota's presumption of public access to government data. Minnesota is somewhat unique with regard to the federal law and other states in that we presume all government data are public unless there's a specific classification. And it's important to remember this, and when we train government, we like to tell them, this is kind of the number one thing we tell them, that when they're doing their work, they're to presume data are public unless they're aware of a specific classification that protects the data. And so that's important for the legislature to consider as well. In making legislation, they want to protect certain data with that presumption in mind. We're going to start from that initial presumption. So this slide is basically an overview of the three relevant laws to data practices. So of course at the top we have the Data Practices Act, which is in Chapter 13. In the bottom corner on the left, we have the Official Records Act. I talked about government data and it being a very broad definition and covering a lot of information. The Official Records Act is a smaller subset of government data. And what the Official Records Act says is that government entities have to maintain official records that are twofold, both to inform the public what they're doing with taxpayer money and to keep official records, and to pass that information on to their successors in office so they're not constantly reinventing the wheel. Now, the interesting thing about the Official Records Act is it doesn't have a definition of official record. It's very broad. It depends on an agency's mission, their statutory authority, as to what constitutes an official record. Now, that brings us to the third law, the Records Management Statute. And what that tells government is that they have to have a records retention schedule that includes all of their official records, and that will tell them how long that they have to keep certain official records before they can dispose of them. Some official records have to be kept forever, some just for a short period of time, 6 months, for example, but it really depends on the what their retention schedule says. And that retention schedule has to be approved by what's called a records disposition panel. And that's something that they have to maintain according to law, and it will list all of their official records and how long they have to keep them. So taken together, we like to say that these three laws constitute the life cycle of government data: how they're created, how they're maintained, and how they're disposed of at the end of their life. I'll give you a short history lesson. It's going to be really short, I promise. The Data Practices Act was passed in the 70s following Watergate. So people were very concerned about what government was keeping. They wanted to make sure there weren't any secret files. And that's how this idea of a public presumption came to be. And the way Minnesota decided to form their public access law is to reserve to the legislature the right to classify specific data. So like I said, it's very different from the federal model, the Freedom of Information model, which has broad exemptions, and it gives government entities some discretion as to when to release data, and then the courts will resolve disputes. In Minnesota, we have a fairly lengthy law that has very specific classifications that tell us how data are protected and when and who they can be shared with. So it's somewhat different. It's a different model in thinking about it. But we want to highlight the three-legged stool. And this is something that to kind of keep in the back of your mind when you're weighing these policy decisions, that there are three prongs to considering data practices. The first is the idea that government has to have data to do its work. The second is weighing in the idea of transparency and accountability of government, while balancing that with the certain privacy rights that are alluded to in the Data Practices Act. So it's this constant balance of thinking of the three-legged stool. Now, in thinking about public data, as I've said, we have a presumption that everything's public. Anyone can have public data for any reason, and they don't have to tell the government why they want it. So that's what we've seen in the media recently, requests for email lists from government cities notification lists. Someone comes in, makes a request for that. It's public data. They get it, and they then get to turn around and do whatever they want with that data. It's public. Government gives it out, and then anyone can do anything they want with it. So our three important takeaways for you, again, and I can't highlight this enough, the presumption that government data are public. So always starting with that basic presumption. You, as the legislature, get to make the decisions about how data are classified. So you're always weighing the policy decisions, thinking about the three-legged stool, whether to protect data or not, and considering accountability and transparency, balanced with government's need to have the data, and balanced with the certain privacy rights that are allowed to certain entities or individuals. So, my quiz for you. And you don't have to answer. If you know the answer, you can certainly think about it in your head, but it's more of kind of an initial reaction. When you see these, what do you think they should be? These are actual examples of classifications in law that have, the legislature has weighed those policy decisions in determining whether to protect the data or whether they're public. So the first is a government employee's job title.
Public,
right? We all know that's public. There's a section in the Data Practices Act called the Personnel Data Section, and that lists basically what data about government employees are public, and it has a list of those data elements, the job title being one of them, and then it says everything else about government employees are private. So the second one, city council minutes, public. That's obvious. And that's based on the presumption. So we don't have a specific classification for the data. It's just presumed to be public because of our presumption. A public school student's grade in biology.
Private.
Right. We also have another section, the education data section. That is based on the federal Family Rights and Privacy Act, which classifies student data as private. So generally speaking, all of our student data are going to be private as well. The nature of request for service by law enforcement. Public. Yep. And this is a highlighting an example of law enforcement data. Law enforcement data has a few specific subdivisions that highlight data that are always public, even if there's an active investigation. So that's important to remember. The nature of a request is always going to be public. Genetic information maintained by government. Yep, that's private. And that was a few years back. The legislature weighed the policy decisions in making that information maintained by government private. Email addresses on a city's snow emergency notification list. I gave this away because I've already talked about it. But that is presumptively public. And that is likely something that you will have to weigh the policy decisions this session about whether or not to protect that data is not public. An undercover law enforcement officer's identity.
Right.
Yep. Private, absolutely. And that, again, is law enforcement data. Protection of certain identities are allowed in the law enforcement area. A municipal liquor license. Yep. Again, that's based on the presumption. Absolutely. Active criminal investigative data. Yep, and that's actually confidential, which means the data subject does not even have access to those data. So that's a really specific classification for law enforcement data while an investigation is pending. After it's completed, it becomes public. Unofficial fiscal notes. This is a brand new classification. These are actually private, and that happened, I believe, last session, and it, again, was weighing the policy decisions when a legislator is kind of in the introductory stages of a proposal and wants more information from a government entity before a bill introduction. There's a classification for what's called unofficial fiscal notes as private or non-public. Person who complains to law enforcement about the party next door. It's confidential, and private is really the classification, but you don't get to know the identity of the neighbor who called in to report the loud party going on at your house. And that's something, again, that was weighed. It is to promote neighbors not having a worry or a fear of reporting certain information about their neighbors. So that is my quiz. It highlights some examples of some issues that were faced by the legislature in the past or will be this session. And I hope you now have some tools to try to wrestle with these issues, or at least you know you can contact us with any questions. So I am happy to answer any questions that any of you may have.
Questions for members of the committee for Ms. Christensen. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Christensen, you mentioned at the beginning that there are some rules that the legislature has, and I didn't think the legislature had any rules whatsoever related to record retention or data practices, and I wonder if you could enlighten me about what rules we're supposed to be following.
I'm not sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, I'm not sure about records retention rules. I don't know about that. I think there are some, the House and Senate each have their own rules, and I could look into that and provide you with the specifics of where those rules are located. I certainly can do that.
Any other questions for Ms. Christensen? Thank you very much, Ms. Christensen. Members, there will be ongoing data practices issues that come before this committee. I wanted to take the opportunity now to announce the formation of the Data Practices Subcommittee, which will be chaired by Representative Simon. It will also include Representative Hortman, Representative Winkler, Representative Holberg, and Representative Scott. So that will take up issues as has been the practice as long as I've been around the legislature to field a group of data practices bills and then bring it back toward the full civil law committee for consideration. So be ready for that. We do have several bills up already that are going to be considered next week that will involve data practices that will not be going immediately through the Data Practices Subcommittee just simply because it hasn't been organized yet. With that, we did skip over the discussion. Actually, before I get to that, I wanted to point out one final item in Ms. Christensen's presentation. Folks need to be mindful of the differences between data practices and that which is ultimately available to the public through discovery. For example, in the loud party example, you are not allowed to know who's complained against you. However, if you do put the government to its full proof of proving the case against you that you had a loud party, you would obviously be entitled to face your accuser, as you're entitled to do under the Constitution. But between the administrative portion and that portion, there's a big flow chart and a lot of different hoops that you have to jump through to determine whether or not that information is available to you. So thank you, Ms. Christensen, for explaining some of those. And I would really encourage members of the committee to learn as much of it as you can, because as I stated, it changes as fast as the technology changes, as we're seeing with some of the examples that Ms. Christensen brought up. With that, moving back to committee rules, do all members have a copy of the proposed committee rules in their packet? Did you get a chance to review those? Okay. If members can just take a moment to review the proposed rules, I'm going to be asking for a vote on the committee rules, so we're just going to take a moment for to go through those. And while members are doing that, I neglected to ask if there are members of the public who wanted to be heard on the presentation by Ms. Christensen. Mr. Neumeister is here. Did you want to come back? And Mr. Neumeister, if you could make brief comments on this. Your haircut looks great.
Thank you. I had one when I went, last time I had one, Mr. Chairman, my name is Rich Neumeister. Last time I had one is when I went to the inauguration last time, going again now. Just to let, as a courtesy to let you know, I asked, for the record, my name is Richard Neumeister, and for the record, I asked Chairman Lash if I may make a comment or two for a few minutes about data practices and the importance it is, I think, for this committee and for the legislature. Just in brief, I really believe in citizenship education. I've been a part of the close-up program for 42 years. I was a student on that program back in 71, which ignited me to where I'm sitting today and to where I've made a commitment to every 4 years when they ask old people like me, because I used to be an instructor with them, to go out to their inauguration. I take 20 young people around Washington, D.C., teach them about the government, teach them how to make that accountable, transparent to them. And one of the rules on federal level is the Freedom of Information Act. Depending on their state, because I work with young people from all over the country, it varies. But in this state is the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act. And the responsibility of your committee and the subcommittee is a unique one. Now, there are different words that are called data practices, but they're all different. One is called data privacy. One is called information policy. One is called information principles. The jurisdiction of the Civil Law Committee historically, for many decades, has been they deal with government issues that relate to data and information, but they also deal with medical records issues. They deal with data issues of any kind that deal with insurance. So in the broad, unless jurisdictions have changed, Mr. Chairman, the broad issues of information policy will come to and fro your committee. Now, you're going to hear some older colleagues, I don't mean old in terms of gray hair, and you know, been here for 30, 40 years, but who are experienced and well-knowledged, they'll say, it is very important because information is the lifeblood of many things, whether it be of government, for people to assert their rights, people to find out about certain things for all kinds of dynamics, which I'm sure you're all familiar with. So I can't stress the importance and aspects of that. The second item is that I wanted to just share with you is that, as the chairman said, technology changes fast. And I'll just give you two examples, which I know, speaking with former county attorney Ray Schmitz in Rochester, Ms. Liebling, and Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, and other people, license plate readers. But that's a unique example of how technology is changing dynamics of law enforcement. But one of the questions that I've seen over my decades here, and I very much encourage this committee to own the issue and to ask the questions, is how all of a sudden on license plate readers, for example, have the cops been collecting it for 2 years, 3 years, with all this new technology, no one hardly knows anything about it, and all of a sudden we're dealing with, should it be private, how you're collecting it, what are you using it on, or whatever. Again, how technology goes. And so it's very important for a committee or group to think out of the box on these kinds of things. Another example, which may come to this committee, is 20 years ago in a desk, we would all have personal papers, documents, our calendars, or whatever. Law enforcement wanted to get access to those. Basically, you would need a search warrant. But now, because of the cloud, or a third-party cloud, I won't mention companies' names, whatever. All it takes is an administrative subpoena, which is the less threshold of any of these. So I just share with you data again. I mean, you can go. One can go on. You know, there are attempts possibly this year dealing with trying to change Minnesota's medical privacy laws, which we've been a leader of for access, for easier access for healthcare companies. So, Mr. Chairman, I want to thank you very much for the few moments of your time to just sort of like put a face to legislators and to this committee, and a huge responsibility of this committee to be aware that what you do here with data, which is in any form, computerized, paper, whatever, can have an impact on the people that you serve and for, 5 million residents of Minnesota. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I want to thank you. And what I want to leave you also with is a copy. And it's been a very much a strong prong for government or anything. It's called Fair Information Principles. And it's particularly when organizations and government collect information on us. And I'd like to thank Don Gemberling, who you may or may not see here off and on, who wrote this up when he was a former iPad director of the office that Ms. Christensen is now of. So, Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Neumeister. Are there any questions from members of the committee for Mr. Neumeister? Thank you very much, Mr. Neumeister.
Thank you.
Just for committee members' knowledge, Mr. Neumeister is a citizen lobbyist, I guess you could call him, and is a font of information on this area, so we thank you for that, Mr. Neumeister. Have members had an opportunity to review the proposed rules? You want to speak to it? Representative Scott? Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On rule number 8, just note there in the first line, towards the end of the line, that you have that amendments are to be received by the CA in writing and electronic format. So what you're saying there is you requiring both formats, one or the other won't do, it has to be both?
Primarily, you want the electronic, Representative Scott. We're not going to be hard and fast about that as long as we have the electronic.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions about the rules? Then I'd entertain a motion to approve the rules as stated. Okay. The motion's been moved. Okay, all in favor of the rules as proposed, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, say no. Motion passes. Moving on to subsequent issue announcements. Other announcements from members of the committee. I would lead off by reminding members that there is a law school for legislators held on January 25th. It's at William Mitchell, and it's a day-long event with presentations from judges, lawyers on a variety of topics, including those on civil law. It's sponsored by William Mitchell College of Law and by the Minnesota Association for Justice. You probably have a flyer already, but if you – oh, and our page, Mr. Griffin, has copies of the flyers held up there so you can see what they are. He's got extra ones if you need one. You can ask Ms. Anton DeJulio if you have further questions about that, but I highly encourage it, its attendance at it, especially for those members who are new to this committee, but actually anyone. It's a great refresher from those who are even attorneys but have forgotten some core principles on which we operate in the civil law versus the criminal law. So, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since we're making announcements, I thought I might mention that tonight, unfortunately, at the same time or overlapping the St. Paul delegation's welcome party, which really is too bad, but the Health and Human Service Committees, all four committees in the House and Senate, are having a joint hearing this evening, 6 to 8, to do an overview of the Affordable Care Act. That's going to be such an important topic through this session. And so I just wanted to flag that for people who might not be on one of those committees. Since it is just an overview, and I just started at my phone here so I could find out what room we're in, if people are interested in that. It doesn't totally overlap, so you could go first to the St. Paul event and then to this, and it's in room 10. So just want to give people that opportunity. I'm sure it'll be taped if people need to, can't go and want to look at it later.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. Are there any announcements? Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, the committee should all know it's your birthday today, so they treat you appropriately.
Thank you very much. Really, in reality, every day is my birthday, Representative Holberg. Before I forgot, I actually did want to bring up, and I had planned to do this during another portion, but I found an old document that had the traditional jurisdictional areas of this committee, and I wanted to read it off as quickly as possible so members could get a sense of what we're talking about here. We're talking authority with respect to the Attorney General in the Constitution, Article 5, Section 1, Court of Appeals, District Court, Supreme Court, Department of Human Rights, Board on Judicial Standards, Board of Law Examiners, Commission on Judicial Selection, Commission on Uniform State Laws, County Attorney's Council, Advisory Committee on Rules of Evidence, Laws on Access by the Handicap, Adoption, Attorneys in the Practice of Law, Child Abuse Reporting, Civil Procedure and Evidence, Commitment, Contracts, Corporations and Other Business Organizations, Dram Shop, Election Law, Eminent Domain, Equal Rights, Family Law, Juvenile Law, Human Rights, Liens, Living Wills and Healthcare Directives, Mortgages, Privacy, Probate, Property Interest, Remedies, Revisors Bills, Tort Liability, Uniform Commercial Code, Vulnerable Adult Reporting, Civil Penalties, Evidence, and Consumer Insurance. That's just a sample, so members can expect the broad area of what we're going to be talking about. Now, if this committee took every bill that showed up on bill introductions under that list, we would meet every day, all day, for the next 8 months. So we're not going to do that. However, you can get a sense of what we're going to end up talking about here. Any other announcements? Seeing none, committee is adjourned.